already know. Fulfillment is being in touch with that dimension in yourself before anything happens. That's where fulfillment lies. The rest is the divine play of form. But the divine wants to play out there. It wants the manifestation. It wants two things. There are two movements in the universe. One is the movement into differentiation and into form and into birth, into bodies, into thinking. The universe started from a point of nothingness. That nothingness became one, it's all not quite right because we can't really talk about it. Out of the nothingness came the ball, whatever, that before the Big Bang happened. There was just one point of potentiality for the entire universe. Then at some point, the explosion, if we could call it that, out of that was the beginning of the process of differentiation into increasing number of different forms. And we are still part of that explosion into greater and greater differentiation. But at the same time, this is the pull, the outward pull. Then there's the inward pull back to the source, to the timeless source out of which it all came. And so we as human beings are at a transitional stage where we are we're becoming strongly aware of the pull back to the source. So there are two movements in the universe. One is out into more and more form and more thinking is still there, that movement. There are still many people who believe that the problems of this world can be solved if we just think harder about them. Have more committee meetings about the problems of the world and discuss them, and eventually they can be solved. They don't realize that the problems of the world are there because we have lost touch with the source out of which everything came. So by going into further differentiation, we cannot solve the problems, we'll actually increase them. So we need to balance now, return to the source, and going out into the world. It doesn't mean we don't do anything anymore. We can still create and do, but not lose ourselves in creating and doing and thinking. Lose ourselves in the mind, connected with the timeless, formless source of all life within the space of no thought. Connected with that, then we can create, not we as persons, but we as a universal movement of consciousness. Consciousness wants us to be co-creators of the universe, of form. So we can be that, but only if we are connected. We need conscious connection with the source. So that's the destiny, that's your life purpose. That's why we're here. And if it sounds complicated to your mind, it's only to the mind. It's not complicated at all. It's actually very, very simple. It's so simple that you can't even think about it. Well, it's wonderfully still in here. Usually in these places you have some background air conditioning sound, but here you just have stillness. So we can start by noticing that it is still in this room. And of course, the moment you notice that it is still outside, you're still inside. You have to be still for a moment to even notice that there's silence outside. So it's already a meditation to notice that there is stillness. You can do it in the middle of the night if you wake up. That's usually the most silent time when most people are asleep. And you simply notice that it is silent in the room or outside, and you cannot notice it by thinking about it. That's the wonderful thing. To notice that it's silent, you have to become silent inside. So there's already a shift in consciousness, but the simple fact of becoming aware that there's silence around you, you've become silent within, which means for a moment the stream of thinking has subsided, but you haven't gone to sleep. You're alert, awake. There is a space that has opened up inside you. And I would say that the silence is part of nature also, because wherever you go in nature, and we'll be talking about that, or there may be sounds. Nature has all kinds of sounds, produces all kinds of sounds, from animals to the wind, to the rain, to the flowing water, and so on. There's always also the deeper dimension of silence. So if you walk in a forest, for example, you hear all kinds of subtle sounds. But underneath all the subtle sounds in the forest, there is an all-pervasive silence also. Now, if you go into the forest only with your mind, then you will only notice the sounds, and the mind will try to interpret, oh, that's such and such a bird, that's that, and that's that. It will label. So that's fine. You might think you're present in the forest, but you're not really. You're simply judging what you hear. But if you become aware of the silent dimension underneath the sounds and in between the sounds, then you become present, because the moment you become aware of the silence, you also have become silent. The mind has become still. In that moment where you notice, oh, there's silence, in that moment, not perhaps when you say it, then it's also you're already back in words, but before you say it, so you were able to notice it, that means a space has opened up inside you, a space of awareness, of presence, of no thought, of a shift in consciousness, in fact. It doesn't matter if it only lasted for 2 seconds, it was there, a shift. And you can't really remember it, you can't memorize it. It's not memorable, because in that space of silence, nothing is happening. The silence itself is eventless. All events take place in the silence, but the silence itself, or the inner stillness itself, is eventless. And this is why I sometimes say these talks that you listen to are not interesting, because the interesting means mind stuff. What really matters about us being together here is that we enter that deeper dimension together, and that deeper dimension of still presence is not interesting, because it's not differentiated. You can't say there are not bits and pieces in it. You say, oh, look at that, oh, look at that. In the same way that the sunset is not interesting, or the sunrise, it's too vast, it's too awesome. You can't say, oh, that's an interesting sunrise. No, you just go, wow. There's nothing, it's beyond interesting. It's deeper than interesting. It's deeper than the mind can analyze. The moment the mind starts analyzing, you have reduced it, and there is a place for that also, but that's not the vastness of being. There is a place for analysis, but if you're lost in analysis, continuous compulsive judgment and analysis, then, well, life becomes impoverished. You're lost then in the mind. So you have to be able to use the power of analysis of the mind, yes, but not be used by it. And then you can have thoughts. Of course you have thoughts. You're not going to be totally free of thoughts. But the important thing is you then have a thought. The thought doesn't have you. Because it's terrible to be had by a thought. And so that the whole subject matter of our gathering is to connect more deeply with yourself. And we may be talking about nature, but really we're talking about yourself, to go deeper so that you have a very deep connection with who you are beyond the movement of thought, so that your identity is not derived from the movement of thought any longer. You can still think, but your thoughts are no longer telling you who you are. Opinions about who you are, which then translates, of course, also into opinions about other people. And so you can relate more deeply to others when you are present, but first you need to find that depth in yourself. And we'll see today how nature can help us with that. Once you found the depth within yourself, all your relationships deepen. They have an added dimension. And you can then see that relationships that do not have the dimension of depth are very surface phenomena. There's no true relationship. It's just two mind-made entities, two minds are bouncing off each other with their opinions and mental positions and so on. And even if they're talking about something deep, it's unlikely that it will be deep, but even if it sounds deep, it won't really be deep, because the depth doesn't come from the words. I don't know if each one of you perhaps remembers something that I remember. I don't often talk about the past, but I'll just bring it in just one little memory now, because it's relevant to this moment, what we are saying now. And perhaps you have a similar memory. I have a memory of being 10, 11, and 12 years old, and being mostly unhappy as a child, because of I was unhappy at school, didn't like that at all. At home, my parents were usually in conflict, so there was no peace there, and if there was peace, I knew it was only a brief interval between conflict. So even when there was no conflict for a day or two, I knew it was like walking on through a minefield. And so that's the case, of course, with perhaps some of you had a similar experience. And there's nobody to blame. It's just people act according to their conditioning and level of consciousness. Nobody can act beyond their level of consciousness, so you can't really blame anybody. Of course, they suffer their consequences, yes, but that's another matter. So I was basically an unhappy child, but I was given a bicycle at the age of 10, and we lived in a city But it was only a short bike ride, 15 minutes or so, out of the city. And that was my salvation. And I would quite often, occasionally even, I just didn't go to school. I just said, goodbye, I'm going to school, and then I went off into the country. And then I reached the outskirts of the city, not particularly overpowering landscape of exceptional beauty, just ordinary, some wheat fields, occasionally groups of trees, groves, hedges, but it was nature. And I would slow down on my bike and very slowly and start to look. I looked at and I listened to the wind and the leaves and birds, and I slowed down. And then every time I did that, so it was shedding a burden, and a sentence would repeat itself in my mind. And it's a strange thing. I didn't know why, I didn't even question why I thought this particular sentence. And that sentence was, this will always be here. And this, it kept repeating itself, this will always be here. This will always be here. Years later, when I remember that, I realized that sentence must have meant that I must have realized that there are the two, there's the man-made dimension and there is nature. And nature compared to the man-made world is virtually timeless. The time spans in nature are virtually infinite compared to the short-lived man-made things. So what I actually experienced at that time was transcendence through nature, transcendence of my personal condition, the narrow suffering condition. So nature enabled me to experience that, the transcendence of a different dimension that is beyond the man-made world. And perhaps some of you have similar memories when you were a child, how you related to nature, or how nature helped you or gave you a sense of support. And I believe there aren't many children nowadays that are actually deprived of that, unfortunately, because they are so captivated by their electronic gadgets and computer screens and so on, that their main attention is in this world of little screens. So it's important for every parent to encourage children to experience nature, vitally important for their well-being, as it is for every human being too, for every adult. Now, there may be one or two people being with us here there who perhaps are stuck somewhere in a room and can't get out because of physical disability, or they may be in prison and they say, what can I do? What can we do? We can't get out into nature. Well, you need to remember that your body also is nature, so you can start there. Every time you take a breath, that's nature. Nature is breathing. The air that you are breathing is nature. The very fact of breathing is a natural process. It's not choice. It's done for you. It's not so much that you breathe, although we say, I breathe, but you're not, the body breathes. So it's a natural thing that happens. You wouldn't say, I'm beating my heart. You don't do that, but that's the same thing. The body does it. It's a natural process. For some reason, we say, I'm breathing, because breathing is semi-voluntary. You can stop it for a while, but not for that long, because if you stop it for too long, nature takes over. And you go, ah, 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 ah. So nature takes, as nature, you live with nature, with your body. So even if you can't get out, you can start by being aware of that level of yourself, the physical level, the natural part of who you are, the body. And not just by saying, okay, I'm looking at my hands or my feet, not just the physical, not the external image of the body, but you can go into the body with your attention, and that's you're in nature. Even if you're in a prison cell, you can do that. And even if there's no opportunity, you might be in an office block in Manhattan, and you look out of the window, and all you have is maybe a little bit of sky. Okay, there's a little bit of nature there, you can look at that. But you have more nature than that in yourself. So as you sat in your office, wherever it is, go within first, be conscious that breathing is happening. The body is breathing. Be conscious also of the preciousness of the air. It's such a precious substance. So to acknowledge that is actually part of what sometimes is called to live in a state of gratitude. Now, some people say, what can I be grateful for? There's nothing in my life that I can be grateful for. Well, are you breathing? Yes. Well, you start there. If you start being grateful for the tiniest things, then gradually that expands, and that shift in consciousness of honoring life, no matter how small it is, the manifestation of life as yourself, by honoring that, gratitude arises, and something, a totally different state of consciousness then brings about good things. But you have to start with the good that is already there. If you want, there's not enough good in my life, people say, I need more good, life hasn't given me what I needed. Start with what you have, and the most obvious thing to start with is, I'm breathing. And that's something, it's something very beautiful to feel that you are absorbing this energy that is air, that then merges with your being. It's an amazing thing to honor the process of breath, to honor the fact that you are breathing. You can start with that, that is becoming honoring the present moment. If you're looking for the present moment, which is, of course, all there ever is, some people read it in The Power of Now and were surprised that and they're still surprised when I say the present moment is all there ever is in your life. There's nothing, there is no past and future in your experience except when you think about it, but not in your actual experience. That, yes, it's actually true. The greatest philosopher could come and he could not argue with the fact that there's only, you only ever experience the present moment, there is nothing else. The mind asks, well, where is the present moment? Well, start with your breath, that will always take you into the present moment, because you're breathing now. And you're only ever taking one breath, this one. All other breaths you either remember or anticipate mentally. And it's actually said that the Buddha recommended this as a meditation, maybe even before the Buddha, but the Buddha certainly recommended that people should be aware of their breath as a meditation. He didn't say, as far as I know, that that will take you into the present moment, and he didn't say that will actually stop your mind too. He just said, be aware of your breath. So breath awareness meditation has become a Buddhist meditation that's practiced, but the dangerous thing is with practitioners of meditation is they make it into something to be achieved through it. They want to become good at it. You can't become good at one breath, you're just, this is just one breath. So there's nature and there's the present moment. Here, now, here. Oh, and I thought there was nothing to be grateful for. I'm breathing, or breathing is happening. And then as you become aware of that, you're beginning to feel that your body is also alive on the inside. To feel that there's an energy that is pervading the entire body. That's nature, and it's very close. That's the closest, and you can't get to a tree that close as you can to your body or anything else. So that's really the closest you can ever get to nature is there in yourself as the physical body. But when you become aware, now this is something for us, for each one of us to do right now, not to do, but to notice. There's no doing as such, because we don't have to do anything. You can do, sometimes it helps to move about, to get a little bit of sense that your body is alive. That can help. But you can see this, the body is alive. Can I feel that? Yes, the breath is happening, and there's aliveness in my feet, my hands, my legs. Very subtle at first, but it's there. And there's nature, and that's already a deeper level than what you see. Out in nature, when you look at a tree, you can't, to get deeper than the image of the tree, you have to have gone deeper within yourself so that you can sense the aliveness of the tree. You cannot sense the aliveness of the tree unless you can sense the aliveness in yourself. If you don't sense the aliveness in yourself, you're only approaching the tree with your mind, and your mind might say, oh, that's a nice tree, but you're missing the depth of it. You're missing the fact that there's more here than what the mind tells you there's here. When the mind says there's a tree or a flower or whatever it is, what you're looking at and call a tree and then believe that the word that you have attached to it is actually describes its reality. No, it's a label, it's an abstraction that you put onto this thing that you cannot really understand. It's a vitally alive, mysterious being with great depths. It's as much depth as you, because all forms, all life forms, are connected and come out of the one source of life. So you're beginning to go to feel that when you feel the aliveness of the inner body. It's not quite the deepest source yet, but you're going towards the non-physical, the life energy that comes from the source. So connecting with yourself through breath and feeling the inner body is part of connecting with nature. Often people only notice nature when there's something unusual happening. For example, a thunderstorm. You cannot help notice that. Suddenly there's a flash of lightning, or you go to a place where there's a tornado happening. Of course, then you notice nature. Or you go out into alpine regions, high mountains, overpowering. You're climbing up mountains, and suddenly you hear, as I remember a few years ago in Switzerland, I was walking and suddenly you hear a huge, like a cannon being fired. And there were chunks breaking off the glacier. And of course, that is such an overpowering thing. It stops you and you go, wow, is it coming this way? But most of the time, nature is more subtle than that. And so to notice the nature in its subtle aspect, which is always there, now that requires you to have a certain degree of alertness, attention, alertness is required. You have to, in other words, if you are totally immersed in the thinking mind, you miss the whole thing. And even sometimes I walk in the forest quite often. I see people walking. Some are wearing noise machines. it's not, as if the noise machine that they have in their head anyway were not enough, they put speakers onto their ears so that they don't hear nature, don't hear anything natural, just hear. And even those who don't have these things on their ears, whatever they are these days, technology changes so quickly I no longer know what they're called. I can't catch up. It's no longer CDs or these. This is old-fashioned. It's other things now, digital. Even if they don't have that, often I can see two friends walking in the forest and they're talking to each other, very animated. There's nothing wrong with talking to each other, but they don't, 98% of what's around them, they don't notice. Occasionally they say, oh, look at that, yeah, and then, okay, and let's talk about something more important. Then. Yeah. And even or people walking alone, often they're not really there, they are partly there, but a lot of their attention is still in their thoughts. And even if they are looking and saying, oh, this is, they're exclusively there as the judgmental mind, the interpreting mind, not yet as presence. But nature offers such a wonderful opportunity to enter the state of presence, which is the state of spacious awareness, of just that. There's no conceptualizing thought happening, just spacious, aware presence, the most miraculous state for human beings to be in, the next stage in human evolution. That's nature offers you that opportunity more than anything that is man-made, because everything that is man-made has been made with, to a greater or lesser extent, the mind has come in and transformed nature into something that still is, if you trace it back, everything goes back to nature. Even a piece of plastic cannot be made without something natural to start with, which then the mind transforms. And even a car, everything in the car, if you trace it back where it comes from, of course it comes from nature originally. But in the intervening time period, the human mind has transformed it into something else, and that's nothing wrong with that, except that the man-made things are not as suitable for going deeper and experiencing the state of presence than things that are not, have not been made through thinking, that came spontaneously out of the one consciousness out of which everything comes, produced by the one life, the one underlying intelligence field. Everything has come out of that. And there is no thinking that goes into the... When nature manufactures a flower, look at that. It doesn't say, let's have a committee meeting and draw up a blueprint and talk about what shape should it be. Let's put into the computer the proportions of it and work it all out. It gets very complicated. And they could never manufacture something like that. The subtleness of it, the incredible delicacy of it. So this, yes, of course, this has incredible harmony and beauty, but no conceptual thinking has gone into its making. It's not, an intelligence has created that, it must have, but this is not analytical thought has not created that. And this is why the flower then is more suitable for entering the state of no thought, of pure presence, than, for example, this clock. Because the moment I look at this clock, the mind says, oh, it's such and such a time. And it's nothing wrong with clocks. I like ticking clocks. But and once you are firmly rooted in presence, you can look at anything and be free of thinking, and you can see the beauty even in a clock or a car and say, wow, oh, it's just... But as a help, nature is much more helpful, because nature exists in prior to thought, we could say, evolutionary scale, I could have held this flower up and stopped speaking, and that would have the Buddha's silent sermon 2,600 years ago. People still remember it. He sat there and he was going to speak, and then suddenly he saw this flower, and all he took this flower and looked at it. For how long, nobody knows, but it must have gone on for a long time, and everybody got restless. That's called the Buddha's silent sermon. And then after half an hour or 1 hour, we don't know, because they didn't have clocks then, because they were all monks at that time, other people didn't have access to anything, to spiritual teachings. I talk about that in the New Earth at the beginning. One of the monks, all the other monks looked puzzled. What's he trying to do? What's he saying? And one monk suddenly started to smile. And the story goes that he was the only one that understood that sermon of the Buddha, the one who smiled. And this smile was, according to the story or the legend or the scriptures, the smile was passed on from generation to generation of teacher and pupil. So he became a teacher, that monk, and they say he passed on the smile, which really means the realization, to the next and the next and the next, and after six or seven or whatever generations, it became the origin of Zen. That's how the story goes. So what is it then that he smiled about? Well, let's not conceptualize it. I think you will realize it for yourself as we progress here. Are we then returning, when we go into nature, are we then returning to the level that trees live at, or flowers, or minerals, or birds, whatever it is? Is it an act of return to a primordial stage of being? Not quite. We join whatever natural thing it is that we are perceiving, we join it in the state of no thought. But when we go there, we've gone through thought already. We rise above thought. The flower exists below thought. So, and then we meet in the dimension of no thought. But at a very deep level, we do not become the flower or the cabbage. Well, if you had a choice, you'd probably rather be a flower than a cabbage, but cabbage is beautiful too. We are not regressing. Cabbage is fine for the cabbage, but not for us. The cabbage is totally at ease with itself, one with the source, doesn't inhabit a world of problems, doesn't generate conflict. The cabbage is rooted in being. So is the tree. So is the flower. And even the dog, well, most of them, and the cat, except those who have lived for too long with neurotic humans, they are rooted in being. And this is why people love dogs and cats. There's actually a deep reason, a deep meaning to that, because they can sense that the dog or the cat is more deeply rooted in being, is more at rest within him or herself than the human. The human has gone out very far from the source into further and further differentiation. Everything originates from the one source of all life, the unmanifested, formless, timeless one source. Everything then comes out of that source. And humans are a product, a very differentiated product, gone out a long way from the source. A little bit like the prodigal son in the New Testament, who leaves the father's home, and squanders his wealth and becomes destitute. He has left the source. He has gone so far out that he becomes destitute. He doesn't remember his origins anymore. So the dog, and even less so the flower or the tree, they haven't gone out that far, so to speak, from the source. They're still more of a connection with their origin. And this is also why they are not fearful of death. They don't think about, oh, I'm going to die. And when an animal dies, an animal is very accepting. It surrenders into that. It doesn't make a problem out of living, and it doesn't make a problem out of dying. It doesn't live on the level of problem making, which is a level when you lose your sense of connectedness with the source. Then this is because you identified with the thinking mind, then a world of problems arises. You create a world of, that's what you manifest then. And that's what you end up with on this planet, on this beautiful planet, which is paradise. You end up with layers and layers of complexity and increasing problems. Oh my God, it's all getting so complicated. It's just survival is getting complicated, very complicated. So really now, when we talk about nature exists closer to the source, we have gone out very far, and for us it's not a return to the original level where the animal lives or the tree lives. It's a transcendence where you regain awareness of the source of being with full consciousness, rather than as a natural state, and you don't really know. The dog doesn't know that the dog is one with being. He just is one with being. The tree doesn't know. If you tell a tree, are you one with being? If the tree could understand you, of course, it doesn't have conceptual. The tree is one with being? I don't know. But if you look at nature, everything exists in its... It's so much so at rest within itself. It has so much integrity. Everything natural has such integrity. Integrity, the word originally means being one with yourself, not having split yourself into two or three. For example, when you say, me and my life. The tree doesn't say, me and my life. My difficult life. The tree is life, an expression of life. The human says, I have a hard life. And the hard life that the human says he or she has is a mental construct, because it has no real reality except as a movement of thought, because the only real life that you have is at this moment, ever, always. This is your life now. I'm sit here, breathing, perceiving, there's aware presence. This is life. This is your life. The rest is memories or anticipation through thinking. So the dog doesn't have a life. The dog is an unproblematic expression of life. So is everything in nature. It is life manifesting, the one timeless, sacred, the one, deep down, the one formless life becoming form, as millions of life forms coming out from. They say with a Big Bang it all started, who knows. Before the Big Bang there was nothing. Nobody understands that, because you can't understand nothing. No thing, no form, no time. Out of that void, which is also the fullness of infinite potential, came the forms. More and more differentiated over millions and millions of years. And then finally it becomes the human mind. The most differentiated, as far as we can see, there may be others even more mad somewhere else in the universe. Continuously thinking and analyzing and evaluating. And so then the entity that has to carry that mind is completely out of touch with the source. You're not cut off from the original source, the original oneness. You just don't know it's there. And so that's it. That's the state of being lost. Lost in your mind, lost in the world, split yourself in two or three, having a life that you don't like. Me and my life, me and my story, my sad story. And then life is perceived no longer as a joyful expression of the underlying oneness, but becomes a burden. It gets heavier and heavier. And so this has happened to humanity. Humanity is, this species is at a critical stage now. There's a possibility of a shift into a deeper state, or higher state, if you want to call it that, of transcending conceptual thinking, going beyond. You can still think, but no longer trapped in thinking. This is where humanity has to go. And as you transcend conceptual thinking, you regain what was lost eons, eons ago. You regain your sense of connectedness with being. You feel deep down you're connected with something vast, and it's not different from who you are. We just, when we put it into language, it sounds as if that was something different from who you are. You're connected with being, with a sense of simple beingness. Being comes from the word to be, the most primordial thing. And everything in nature is an expression of that underlying beingness, and including the physical body, this body. All that we perceive in this world is existence. This body exists. Underlying existence is being. Being is the formless, timeless dimension within yourself. It's very much like the black hole at the center of the galaxy. When I was writing The Power of Now, I wrote, there is a black hole at the center of every galaxy. And the editor saw it and said, you can't say that because you don't, how can you know that? The people are going to argue with that. So it was taken out. And some years later, I read an article by a scientist and said, now scientists believe that there is a black hole at the center of every galaxy. And so, why did I know that? I knew that because I could feel the black hole inside myself. The spacious, formless one life, the origin. I know that the human being is a microcosm. It's just what you can understand the whole universe by understanding yourself. You are just a microscopic version of that. So that's we are regaining, by no longer being lost in the conceptualizing mind, we regain something that was lost a long, long time ago, very much like the prodigal son in the New Testament. Your origin. Not your origin in, you can say, it's not really your origin in time. It's not saying, okay, my origin was 6 billion years ago. That's where I started. When the Big Bang happened, that was the beginning of me. That's true, of course. that was the beginning. But it's not so much that the origin is in the distant past or not even in the near past. The origin is timeless, the origin of your being. It is still there, this primordial nothingness, no-thingness before the Big Bang is still in you now. Nature can help you rediscover that if you approach it not with the conceptualizing mind, but you approach nature and perceive nature in a state of alert attention, spaciousness. And that's a wonderful, wonderful, first we could call it a practice, but then it's no longer a practice, it becomes a natural way of being. First in nature and then even in the man-made world. But we need to first of all be able to, we are going into it now, do it in the forest or on the beach or in the field, wherever it is, before you can be in that state in the shopping mall where everything it's not so being, you can't really find being that easily. You have to be rooted very deeply in yourself to find being in the shopping mall, because everything is surface phenomena. Buy me, do this, eat a hamburger. look here. And then after 20 minutes in the shopping mall, you're totally exhausted because all the energy is flowing out of your eyes into phenomena. And music is in the background. Not the most profound music, just. And yet you could be walking in the forest for 3 hours and not feel exhausted, in fact feel invigorated. Isn't that strange? So the shopping mall takes it out of you, and the forest or whatever, the beach or the desert puts it back. There's something there that's very, very different, but not for everybody. There needs to be the openness and the alertness so that all the seemingly insignificant things in nature, you are alert to that. And that, for example, you're walking a tree, the slight movement of leaves in the breeze, perhaps a sound associated with it. Your senses are alert, not strained, not there's no tension, not you don't go. No, just alert. In that alertness, of course, there's no thought anymore, because if you were thinking, you would not be alert. Thought is not alert, it's a lower state. Alertness is a higher state than thought, a higher consciousness than thought. But good thoughts, which means creative thoughts, original thoughts, original insights, can only come out of the alertness. You need to have the alertness, and then sometimes thought becomes fruitful and original and creative out of that. But if you never touch the alertness, then thought is repetitive. Old records, CDs, not records anymore, and not CDs anymore, old iPods or whatever. So nature then, you have to approach nature with that alertness, attentiveness. like a little child, as if you had come there for the first time into that place. Let's say you maybe you drive somewhere, or it's maybe it's close to where you live. You get out of the car or out of your door. Or in most for most people, even wherever you live, there will be something natural when you step out of your house somewhere. Even if you live downtown, there may be a little tree somewhere. Not acknowledged by most people. Almost everybody walks past it without looking because they have more important things to think about. But you, for a moment, you acknowledge that. Not by saying, oh, I should be acknowledging the tree. You just acknowledge, you give it attention. And in that moment, you notice little things about it that before you didn't notice, how the quivering leaves, how the light shines through the branches or the leaves, how the light interacts with the tree. And you notice all these things without having to call it anything. There's just a noticing. And this is a practice. You can practice that as a choice, because you choose to relate to nature in a different way. And when you do that, then nature gives you something back. What it gives you back is some of that energy of connectedness with the source that the tree is still in. This energy comes back to you. The tree gives you that back. It says, have some of this. I have more than enough. And you get... So it helps you to feel that connectedness. But you are also helping the tree. I'm saying that intuitively. The tree hasn't spoken to me like that. Maybe some trees speak to some people, but not to me. Prince Charles years ago said he talked to the plants, and that's of course a wonderful thing. And I think he not only talked to the plants. I think he meant he gives them his full attention. And ever since, the newspapers have been making fun of him because they don't understand. It's just the mind doesn't want to understand that. So you're giving it attention. It's not just that the tree, and I'm only using tree as an example, it could be a tree, it could be a flower, it could be an entire forest, because the attention that you give, you can give to either a single natural phenomenon or being, like a tree or a flower, or even a blade of grass or a little plant, whatever it may be. You can also give attention to a more inclusive energy field, like an entire valley. That is, it has its own energy field, its own spirit, almost, one could say, or a forest as you walk. So there are two modalities, one could say, of being there in, let's say it's the forest. You can notice single things like trees or plants, and for a moment you give them attention. There's a looking in alertness, and then you look at something else. And there's no choice really involved in not saying, okay, what can I look at now? It happens naturally. Your eyes, you look at this, and then suddenly you look at something else. And then you take in the totality of what's there, just a general, without always necessarily focusing on one thing, you take in the totality. And that is, there's an expression in Zen which is translated as a choiceless awareness, an expression that also I believe Krishnamurti used, choiceless awareness. So you take in the totality of what is around you. And then the entire energy field of what's around you then connects with you, and you connect with it. So it gives you what some of that connectedness with the source that nature never lost almost transmits itself to you. But it's a reciprocal process. What you give nature is the awareness of itself. Because we need to remember that nature, it's not that you are separate from nature, you haven't been put into nature, you have come out of nature, you are nature also. You are nature that is in the process of becoming conscious of itself. And so what you then give back to the tree or the flower or the forest is awareness of itself. It recognizes, because the